Good morning, everyone. I'm Angela Davis, and you're listening to NPR News. So glad you could be with us today. It is the week after Mother's Day, and according to Minnesota wisdom, that means it's finally warm enough to start planting your garden. But experienced and novice gardeners alike may still have some questions. What should we plant this spring? Which plants will be resilient in the face of climate change? Should we be mowing our lawns or not? And how can we attract bees and other pollinators? This hour, I'm talking with two master gardeners, and we will answer all these questions and more. And we're going to take your phone calls and questions, too. Do you need some advice right now on what to plant and when, or how to avoid some mistakes from last year? Any questions about getting your lawn or your garden ready for warmer weather ahead? Call us at 651-227-6000. Or you can call 800-242-2828. You can also tweet me at Angela Davis, NPR. Go ahead and leave me some photos, too, if you think that would help me out. Let's bring in our two guests. So happy to welcome back to the program, Catherine Grant. Catherine is a horticulturalist and greenhouse manager in the Department of Biology at the University of St. Thomas in St. Paul. Good morning, Catherine.
Good morning, Angela. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. We also have on the line Julie Weisenhorn. Julie is a horticulture educator and associate professor at the University of Minnesota Extension. Hi there, Julie.
Hey, Angela. Hey, Catherine. How you doing?
Hey, Julie. Good.
Good. Well, I want to start with what's happening right now. As we look outside at lawns and trees and plants, we've had a long, cold spring. Now it's suddenly hot. What do we need to know about the impact of some of this wild weather that we've seen the last few months, the last few days, on our lawns and gardens? And I'll start with you, Julie.
Well, that is quite, it's been quite a roller coaster, I think, that we've had this past spring. But, you know, it is Minnesota. And every time I say that to somebody, they say, well, last year was kind of that way, too. I think the interesting thing is that we have a lot of plants that have been proven to survive these crazy fluctuations, but they are getting more extreme with climate change. So we're getting more extreme weather events. We've had some amazing storms the past couple days, mm-hmm. lots of rain. We've had a lot of snow up north, not so much down south. It's really about variability, and the important thing is to choose plants that will be able to survive that variability and do well.
And so that may mean doing something differently than you've done in the past. Yes, Julie?
Right. So one of the most important things is understanding the conditions that you have and then choosing plants that with growing requirements that match those conditions. If you try to put or force plants into, you know, growing in kind of not entirely optimal conditions, those plants will be stressed and they will not be able to survive or at least flourish in your garden.
We don't need any more stress. I really just don't need any more stress. And Julie, you were very polite there. You said that it's been a roller coaster, but you just tweeted a few minutes ago. You said that spring has been like the crazy chipmunk roller coaster at the state fair. What will the 22 gardening season bring? What do you think the gardening season is going to bring, folks? Are we going to be happy by the end of it?
Boy, I don't know. I have to get my magic eight ball out and look at that. But I think it's the million-dollar question. We get that almost every day from somebody like, what do you think it's going to be like this year? And we read Mark Seely's Weather Talk. That's mm-hmm. a great blog to stay up on information on the weather and climate change. We also do a lot of talking with growers and with professionals and also with gardeners, just average gardeners, to find out what's happening throughout the state and do our best to predict. But it's, you know, we have to react sometimes. We try to be as proactive as possible as gardeners, but sometimes it's a reactionary thing that we have to mm-hmm. do too.
And Catherine, what do you want to tell people about, you know, what the last few months of this weather, what it has brought to us who love to garden? What are you seeing as you walk around and drive around town?
What I see is a fast forwarding of spring, right? Mm-hmm. So we didn't really get spring. We had that miserable gray sky every day and
it was
colder
miserable
than normal temperatures. Mm-hmm. I know. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, everything is just in an accelerated mode, right? So everything is starting to bloom and it's blink and you'll miss it kind of a spring, which I hate. But I'm just trying to enjoy what's unfolding right now and trying to slow myself down a little bit just to enjoy it all. But I think the problem is that it just, we jumped right into the 90s, but the next week or so looks pretty nice. It looks pretty, more moderate temperatures, so we can get some gardening done.
So it is, it safe to plant, Catherine?
It is. Oh. I believe it is. All what right. you want to look at is overnight lows wherever you live. And in the Twin Cities right now, we have one night coming up that maybe is dipping under 50. So if you've already got your tomatoes and peppers and stuff out, you might want to just take a little extra care with them on that night. But other than that, as long as we stay above 50 at night, I think we're good to go.
All right. And Julie, would you agree? It is, we've got the green light to start planting?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm in full agreement with Catherine on that. And I think that I think there's a lot of things you can do too. You can use things called like walls of water around your tomato plants. These are these kind of tubes of water that fit, they're like in a cone. You fill them with water and that water holds the heat from the day to keep the plant safe through the night. And you can use that at these kind of these shoulder seasons where we do have maybe a potential of dipping below 50, but maybe not. You can use floating row covers. You can use cold frames. So there's some of those things that you can do. We have a good article on Extension on our Yard and Garden News about gardening tips for a cold spring that gives people kind of a heads up on a few things they can do.
Now, before we get into planting, I need to talk to both of you about these conversations I've been hearing about grass and when is the best time to mow the grass. I've been seeing, you know, stories and having conversations with people about no mow May, leave the leaves. Catherine, can you start us off with, you know, first tell us about no mow May. What is that about?
Absolutely. I would love to talk about no mow May. No mow May is a nice marketing term.
It is.
And it came out of the UK. I think a nonprofit called Plant Life started this in the UK a few years back, where they encouraged people to not mow their lawns for the month of May, because the month of May generally corresponds to the emergence of the bees that have overwintered or are coming out of hibernation. And when they come out in early spring, there's not many things that are blooming to give them the pollen and the nectar they need, both to nourish themselves and to start a new round of us baby bees, basically. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of us have in our lawns, if you have a perfectly manicured lawn that is only Kentucky bluegrass, this doesn't really apply to you. But if you've got dandelions, violets, self-heal, and clover in your lawn, you want to give it a chance to bloom, and you don't want to get that lawnmower out right when it's starting to bloom and mow down all of the flowers that are there, because the bees will come out and they won't be there for them. And so
this is very tragic.
It's damaging.
It
is damaging. And so we want to increase the amount of forage there are for early spring bees. And you can do that in multiple ways, but most of us have lawns. And if you have flowers growing in your lawn, please, for the month of May, just ignore the itch to get your lawnmower out. I'm ignoring the itch myself right now because I can see a lumpy lawn out there with things growing in it. Just let the flowers bloom and provide habitat for the early emerging bees. And also, just go try to sit down and calm yourself and notice that there are bees that are flying to and fro amongst those things that you think are weeds and that are a sign of bad homeownership. It's actually you're providing a habitat for them. Mm-hmm. So spend a little time calming down and watching the bees foraging, and then you'll feel better about the no-mo.
Okay, no-mo May. Julie, do you want to add anything to that, the importance of this?
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. You know, in Minnesota, we have this, ideally, we'd like to have something blooming in our yard from April through October to provide, as Catherine mentioned, nutrition for early emerging bees. The problem is we don't have a lot of flowers that bloom in. I mean, we can have a lot of wildflowers. We have great, ephemerals that come out, but a lot of people don't have tons of those. And so we have a lot of lawn. And so by leaving that and allowing these plants to bloom in your lawn, you're adding to that food source for these early bees. Mm-hmm. The other thing about mowing is let your grass grow. This is the time of year it really gets going. We have cool season grasses in Minnesota. And the longer when we have a better root to shoot ratio, in other words, we have longer blades, we produce longer roots in our grasses. And that will help the grass survive those really tough, dry, hot Julys that we get.
Hmm.
So leaving your grass longer, you know, when you do go to mow it after no mow May, then raise your mower to about 3-3.5 inches so that you have longer blades and you'll have a much healthier lawn. You'll be able to use fewer pesticides for weeds. It'll shade the weeds out and you'll just have healthier, thicker lawns overall.
All right. And I mentioned it, so now I need to get more details about it. Leave the leaves. Tell us about leave the leaves, Catherine. As we start to get phone calls in, and I'm going to take these phone calls in just a moment, but what do we need to know about the role that leaves are playing?
Right. So leaves fall from trees, and they fall on our gardens and on our lawns and on our hardscapes. And it's perfectly acceptable to get them off of your hardscape and off of your lawn, but where they really belong is in your beds. And leaves to me are free fertilizer and free mulch. Mm-hmm. And they feed, when leaves decompose in your beds, they're feeding a whole bunch of invertebrates and bacteria and fungi and things that live in the soil, and they transform the leaf into nutrients that are now available for your plants. So instead of going out and buying fertilizers at the garden store, leave your leaves on your beds. And a lot of people think they look messy, and they also get itchy rake fingers, like they want to go rake all those leaves out at this time of year. And I've been doing this for over 20 years, where you leave them in, you bite your fingernails, and you wait. And as soon as your garden starts growing in and the leaves knit together, you don't see the leaves anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And they eventually disappear because they decompose. Also, this is a little weird, but at night, if you go out in a yard that has a nice mulch of leaves in the beds, mm-hmm. you can hear the earthworms coming up and eating them.
What?
I know that sounds weird, but yeah. Everyone who has leaves, do it. It will freak you out a little bit, but it's pretty interesting. And what you're doing is you're providing food. So once again, like taking away the flowers in your lawn before the bees can get to them, if you take the leaves away, you're taking away a food source for all the microorganisms and the invertebrates that live in your soil and keep your soil healthy for your plants. And I think there's just an aesthetic thing where Americans, we all like to like rake them out and have a clean, naked bed, naked soil, or you bring in the new truckload of mulch that comes from who knows where and lay it down. And we all think this shows that we care about our yards and this is what we like to see. But you just have mm-hmm. to train yourself to like the look of leaves as mulch.
Mm-hmm. And just to reinforce the message, we need to calm ourselves and breathe and get educated about what's happening. Now I'm thinking as I walk out of my house every day, I just want to greet all the little critters that are living out there in the grass and in the trees and in the leaves. We're talking with two guests, two master gardeners, about what we should and shouldn't be doing right now as you start to look at spring planting and gardening. And what questions do you have about your garden or your trees or your grass? The phone lines are open. Call us at 651-227-6000, or you can call 800-242-2828. I'm talking to Catherine Grant, a horticulturalist and greenhouse manager in the Department of Biology at the University of St. Thomas, as well as Julie Weisenhorn, a horticulture educator and associate professor at the University of Minnesota Extension. 651-227-6000 or 800-242-2828. Let's go to the phone lines in Minneapolis. Mary Jo's on the phone. Good morning, Mary Jo. What's going on at your home?
Hi, I'm Mary Jo, and I live in Longfellow, Minneapolis, and I have a small yard, city yard, but it's a corner lot, and my dog Tonks is sort of the unofficial mayor of the, you know, the blocks in Longfellow, and so all these dogs come over, and it's sort of an informal dog park, and my grass is, you know, has not survived it very well, but I have clover and variegated violets, and then this sort of short-leaved weed that has sort of filled in the lawn, and actually it looks, and then there's clumps of dirt that, you know, where urine or something. And I'm wondering, should I sort of rake it a little bit, those areas, and seed it with clover, or is there another, like a bee lawn seed, or I saw there was a cottage brand which had more hardy grass, and, mm-hmm. you know, what would you suggest?
All right, that's Mary Jo in Minneapolis. It sounds like she's hosting some dog parties, and it's messing up her grass. Julie, what advice do you have for her?
Well, good for you for having dog parties. That's awesome. and being realistic about your lawn. A lot of people with dogs say, what can I do to eliminate these brown spots from the dog's peeing on there? And there really isn't anything to do except rake it up and reseed it. I like that you have a mixture of plants in your lawn. And I think that your idea to use clover, or you can use a B-lawn mix. As Catherine mentioned earlier, that B-lawn mix is actually quite a, it's quite high in grasses, mostly fine fescues, which is a tough turf grass, and a little bit of Kentucky bluegrass, but then also perennial flowers like white Dutch clover, self-heal, ground plum, and creeping thyme. And these four flowers bloom at different times of the season, and they are appreciated by different kinds of bees. So that's the great thing to use in your yard. There, it's also a pretty good ground cover. I'm not sure it would endure like great racing dogs and things like that, but it's a great thing to do. I think raking up those spots, getting rid of some of that dead grass that you see, and then seeding it would be a good thing to do. You might want to put some small fencing around some of the larger spots just to keep the dogs out of there. And be sure to water it so that those seeds stay hydrated. You want good seed to soil contact too. So rake up that soil. You can mix a little topsoil in with your seed and just spread it out there, and then keep it watered.
All right. Thank you. Let's take another phone call from a listener as we talk about gardening in Minneapolis. Also, we have Catherine. Good morning, Catherine. What was your question?
Good morning. Hi. Yeah, this is such a perfect conversation. As I look out my window after last summer with the drought and the heat, Creeping Charlie kind of took over the entire backyard, and I don't mow, and I love to use leaves and keep everything environmentally friendly for the pollinators, but I'm also wondering if the Creeping Charlie eventually, as the season wears on, will actually be detrimental to choking out, as I see it wrap around the ferns or wrap around other things in the yard. Is there a way to balance the Creeping Charlie and try to get grass back, or do I just try to maintain Creeping Charlie?
All right. Catherine, can you help Catherine in Minneapolis with her Creeping Charlie problem?
I shall try. Creeping Charlie is a problem, and if you give up, it's an aggressive weed that creeps along the ground, which is why it's called Creeping Charlie. So if you... And it will go into your beds. It will go everywhere you allow it to go. And so if it's up to you to decide how much effort you want to put into controlling it and containing it, but its modus operandi is to expand and go anywhere it possibly could go. So the ways to get rid of it or to try to contain it is you and a trowel and digging it up by the roots. And another way is to try and smother it with something else that's going to grow as faster than it. But that's a very tough battle you've chosen there. I've known people to decide to get rid of the Creeping Charlie, and the best way, honestly, is to put down black plastic or something and smother it and kill it. And then once you've done that, you plant something else in it. But you're always going to have to be pay attention to find it and kill it, because it's just going to keep coming back.
And Julie, any advice about battling Creeping Charlie?
Well, Creeping Charlie, as Catherine mentioned, it's a perennial weed. It is in the mint family, which if anybody's had mint take over, they know what I'm talking about. And it is not a very beneficial pollinator plant. That's one thing. It's kind of a myth. We did some research. James Wolfen, who was a graduate student in our entomology department, took a look at the flowers of Creeping Charlie and found that the nectar they provide is pretty marginal and pretty spotty. So we see a lot of bees on the flowers because there are a lot of flowers on Creeping Charlie, but the pollen rewards are pretty lame, so, and the nectar rewards. There is the option of chemical. I hate to bring that up because a lot of people don't want to use those, but a combination of glyphosate and triclopyr would be one option for really, really infested areas. But you have to be careful with that because it will kill everything it touches. So it's really just for large patches that you are going to kill off and then promptly reseed in a type of, in a lawn grass or a bee lawn, or plant a shrub or a tree in that location. But when it gets into your garden, Catherine's right. It's take a trowel, dig it up, keep working on it. I also recommend when you have invasive plants like this is that you pick your battles. You know, you choose the areas that you're going to really eradicate and focus on. Don't, you know, if you have a large yard, it can be very overwhelming. So say, I'm going to worry about it up to this point, and after that, you know, I'm not going to worry so much about it. Or I might use a longer term control, as Catherine mentioned, like a smothering, where you can cover it with leaves or plastic or something that just smothers the plant out. But that takes a long time. Mm-hmm. And so that would be another option too.
Let's take another phone call as we talk with two master gardeners about getting out there and planting some new plants and taking care of our landscaping and our grass and our trees. In St. Michael, Eve is on the phone. Hi, Eve.
Good morning. I can't get to my front garden because I've invited ground hornets. Ooh. I have clay, but I've done such a good job amending the clay that the hornets have moved in.
Oh, no.
So I can't do anything. I bought dust, the powder, so that I can powder all of the nests, and I can't tell how many there are because they're in the mulch, they're in the rocks. I don't know where the entrances are, so I'm going to have to powder the entire thing. And I was thinking, can I cover it with, like, clear plastic so that they can't get out and so that they'll have to track it in and out? Or what can I do? Because I don't want to dig up the entire bed and then I'll get stung. What do I do?
That's Eve in St. Michael with a problem with ground hornets. It sounds to me like, can't you call someone to help, a professional to come in with this? What are your thoughts, Catherine?
Yeah, I think the first thing you want to do is get a professional to ID them to make sure that is what you're dealing with. And it's kind of hard to do now over the phone because it could be that maybe you do know that they're hornets, which sting and aren't very nice to have around, but it also could be just a ground dwelling bee, which you'd want to encourage them to be there. So I would say I would find a reputable pest control company, experience with that, to have them come and positively ID what you have, and then take it from there in terms of the best methods of control.
All right, let's take another phone call in Minneapolis. Karen's on the line. Good morning, Karen.
Good morning. Last year, Japanese beetle larvae destroyed our front lawn, like a lot of people in the neighborhood. And I'm wondering what I can plant there that won't be similarly destroyed going forward.
All right, Karen's got a problem with Japanese beetles and says this was a problem for a lot of other folks. Julie, what can you tell us about that?
Well, I think that Japanese beetle grubs at this time of year are very large. They're at their mature size and they're just about ready to pupate into adults. And treatment for grubs, for if they are indeed Japanese beetle grubs, is actually around July. And this is because the adults, right now, the grubs are so large that treating them is very difficult. And once the adults emerge, these new adults, they go and then they lay their eggs, and those hatch out into small larvae, and those are easier to control. So treatment is middle of the summer. Mm. If you, with your lawn the way it is now, you're asking about what to plant that they won't feed on, it's going to be something other than grass. So it's going to be shrubs. It could be, you might try a different type of ground cover as well. We have a good webpage on that for extension. You can see a variety of those on our Yard and Garden page.
What are some examples of ground cover? If we're not going to have grass there, can you give me some examples?
Well, it depends on what you want to do in that space. If it's active, if it's a play area, for example, really grass is all you can put down. Mm. So then you would have to treat your lawn for grubs. Now, the other options, if it's an area that's maybe less used, that you just, you know, it's a side yard or something, you could do ground covers like Pachysandra, which is not really a walkable ground cover, but something that would certainly cover the ground. It does well in shady areas. And you could also choose something like, Catherine, I'm drawing any blanks here.
Well, I have a question on Twitter about ground cover. Kimberly is asking, she says, I bought some micro clover to plant in my lawn. Could your guest give me some information on tips on how to plant this ground cover? Is that a good one, an alternative if it's in the right space?
Micro clover is really an area, I think, or a plant for lesser, like not really walking areas. Maybe it could go between stepping stones, or it could go between beds, but it's not that the problem with a lot of ground covers is they're really not for walking, for playing, for traversing, or very lightly. So they're there to cover soil. They're there to hold in soil as well.
Mm-hmm.
And they're really a living mulch, mm-hmm. so to speak. So instead of our wood mulch, you're putting in the living mulch.
All right. Let's
sedges take a- are a good idea.
Oh, there's one. Okay.
Yep. Sedges are a good idea for shadier, moist areas. And any things like a juga. A juga is another type of ground cover.
And you said there's a page, the University of Minnesota Extension has a whole page on the website right. devoted to this.
Yep, ground covers for gardens.
All right, let's take another call before we go to a news break. And Edina Adams on the phone. Hey, Adam, what's going on with your lawn?
Hey, Angela, I'm so happy I stumbled upon the show today. 2 years ago, we bought a house, and it was winter. And when the snow melted, all of a sudden we were like, whoa, we don't have any lawn back here. What's going on? Then all of a sudden, this magic started happening and all these plants and flowers started to bloom. And we found out that the previous owner was a master gardener, and I am not a gardener. So it's been very intimidating the last couple of years. Based on the leaf conversation and leaving those in your beds, all of the hostas, it's like a dense shade garden. Should I let all of that stay in the ground throughout the winter, or should I clean that up is probably my first question. I could ask 100 more, but that's the big one on my mind.
All right. So Adam is discovering a wonderland in this home now that the snow has melted and is revealing what the previous homeowner had there, a master gardener, specifically asking about hostas. Any advice, Catherine, from what you heard in his question?
Yeah, sure. So that's kind of an exciting thing. And all gardeners start from, you know, at zero and don't know anything. And they learn year by year. And hostas certainly can live amongst leaves. They're shade tolerant. So they generally live under trees. The only thing you might notice is when the hostas come up, they're sort of like a spear. And sometimes there'll be a leaf that they spear through, and it kind of rides up with them as they grow, and it might sort of tear at the leaves when the leaves open. So just pay attention to, do I have any speared leaves that I need to pick off of my hosta before the leaves sort of fan out. But I'm glad you called from Edina, because there's two things I forgot to mention earlier. One is that Edina is all in on the no-mow May, and they've suspended the weed ordinances for mowing lawns until June 5th.
The city did this.
The city did this. So yay, Edina. And they have signs and everything so that you put the sign out, people know why you're not mowing. And the other benefit of the leaves, which I also forgot to mention, is that the leaves provide insulation and cover for those queen bumblebees. The only ones that live through the winter are the queens for next year. And they burrow underneath the leaves into the soil where they spend the winter. So you want to leave that down for them as they emerge. I saw one yesterday in my yard. It flew in, it landed, it went underneath the leaf cover and disappeared for the night. And I was just so happy to see it. There's a lot of other invertebrates that use the leaves to insulate and suspend the winter, sometimes as eggs, sometimes as pupa. And they, if you rake your leaves out now, put them in a bag and give them to be hauled away, you're hauling away potentially lots of butterflies and moths and various other insects, beneficial insects that have been living in your leaf litter. So leave the leaves and enjoy your garden.
I'm talking with two master gardeners about the do's and don'ts right now as the weather warms up and things are starting to turn green. If you're thinking about planting, we're going to talk a lot about that after the news break as you try to make some decisions about what to plant out there this spring. And also, I want to take a moment just to say thank you to all the members, all the people who donated to NPR News during our spring member drive. Your gift makes a difference, and we are so grateful for your support. So again, thank you to
everyone who donated to NPR News during the spring member drive. And there is still time to give. Your support is still needed. Just go to nprnews.org. All right, right now, let's check in with Phil Picardi to see what's happening in the news. Hi, Phil.
Good morning, Angela. British officials have confirmed Russia lost significant numbers of troops and equipment trying to cross a river in eastern Ukraine. The Ukraine Defense Ministry earlier tweeted pictures of a smashed pontoon bridge and destroyed armored vehicles. Meanwhile, a Russian soldier stands accused of killing a Ukrainian civilian in the early days of the war. It's Ukraine's first war crimes trial. The lawyer for WNBA star Brittany Griner says her pretrial detention in Russia has been extended for 1 month. Alexander Boykov believes the case will come to trial soon. Griner, a two-time Olympic gold medalist, was detained at the Moscow airport after vape cartridges containing oil derived from cannabis were allegedly found in her luggage. Thousands of Palestinians attended the funeral in Jerusalem of an Al Jazeera journalist who witnesses say was shot dead by Israeli forces in the occupied West Bank. Recent days have seen an outpouring of grief from across the Arab world over the death of Shireen Abu Akleh. At least 38 people have been rescued and 11 bodies have been recovered by the U.S. Coast Guard. The boat carrying suspected migrants capsized in waters northwest of Puerto Rico. At least 8 Haitian nationals who were rescued have been hospitalized. Elon Musk says his planned $44 billion purchase of Twitter is temporarily on hold, pending details on spam and fake accounts on the social media platform. It's another twist after signs of internal turmoil amid the Tesla billionaire's planned buyout of the company. Twitter fired two of its top managers yesterday. And calm, quiet weather is expected for Minnesota over the weekend. That's after a week of record heat, humidity, and damaging winds. More news ahead on NPR News. The time now is 9:38.
Russia looks to annex Kherson in southern Ukraine, but their troops suffer setbacks close to Kharkiv in the east.
They say that if they can take back their city just by the Russian border, why can't they take back all of Ukraine?
The latest on the war and its fallout on the Friday News Roundup, plus stories from the Philippines and Sri Lanka. That's all next time on 1A.
Yes, 1A is next at 10 a.m. here on NPR News. Then at noon, you definitely want to tune in because it's Politics Friday with Mike Mulcahy. Now, today, Minnesota Republicans are gathering in Rochester to endorse candidates for statewide offices on the ballot this fall, including the Republican candidate for governor. Well, Mike Mulcahy will be at the convention talking with the chairman of the Republican Party of Minnesota, as well as other party leaders and observers about Minnesota Republicans' chances in 2022. That is at noon today, Politics Friday with Mike Mulcahy. Monday morning at 9, I'm going to be talking about summer jobs and seasonal work, particularly for teenagers. With a tight labor market, employers are scrambling for workers, and they're more likely to hire young people. So I'll be talking with the owner of a resort and the director of a summer youth employment program about finding seasonal work, supervising teenagers, and the importance of that first job. That's Monday morning at 9. All right, miss the conversation? Just listen to the podcast. Search for NPR News with Angela Davis wherever you get your podcasts.
Support comes from Delta Dental of Minnesota Foundation, improving oral health while advancing social equities by expanding access to dental care and investing in the communities across Minnesota. DeltaDentalMN.org/NPR.
All right, back to our conversation about gardening and lawn care. My guests today include Catherine Grant, a horticulturalist and greenhouse manager there at the University of St. Thomas, and Julie Weisenhorn, who is a horticulture educator and an associate professor with the University of Minnesota Extension. Taking your phone calls, the number is 651-227-6000 or 800-242-2828. And you can tweet me at Angela Davis, MPR. I appreciate Julie, the folks there at the University of Minnesota Extension, as they listen to the conversation, they've been tweeting out links with advice for folks as we talk about some of these topics. So thank you to the folks there. Let's take a phone call right now from Lake Elmo. Bonnie's on the phone. Bonnie, what's going on in your yard?
Well, first of all, thank you for taking my call. I was out in my garden weeding when your program came on.
Well,
so this
that's
is perfect.
Convenient.
And what I what I have a lot of is Siberian squill. And it introduced itself here 3 to 4 years ago, and it's spreading, and it's thick like a carpet, and it's delightful in the early spring. But I'm wondering, should I try to eradicate some of it? It's almost impossible. Or should I just let it be?
What is it called again, Bonnie? Siberian what?
Siberian squill, I believe.
Okay, I've not even heard of it. It's a ground cover, you said?
No, it's these little grass-like leaves, and it puts out a beautiful drooping baby blue flower in the early spring.
All right.
April.
Julie, do you know what this is?
Oh, yes. Yep, I do know what that is.
Is it bad?
Well, it's a type of bulb, and it's a plant that gardeners have planted in their yards, in their gardens for a long time. It has escaped into naturalized areas, which it seeds readily and after it blooms. And so it does form these big masses. You can go to the University of Minnesota on the St. Paul campus and see it in the woodland area. And it is, if you talk to natural resources people, they hate the plant. If you talk to gardeners, they often love it. So it's this kind of
it's controversial.
Back and forth. Right. What to do about it is digging out spaces. You can try to do that if you want to reduce it. And you can also mow it before, right as it's just finishing blooming, before it sets seeds, you can go in and mow it. And that will at least use a bagger on your mower too if you have one. That will at least prevent the plant from setting seed and spreading further. If you are near a woodland area, we do not recommend ever planting it because it can escape into woodlands. And it does, as the caller mentioned, does kind of form this big mass, which can outcompete other plants that are more desirable. And so it's tricky. It's one of these horticulture plants, these landscape plants, that has become somewhat problematic for natural area managers. And yet, people love seeing it in their garden. So I would say that if you have it in your garden, just, and this doesn't pertain as much to the caller, I don't think, because she has a lot of it. But if you have a small amount of it, just try to deadhead it before it spreads, before it sets seeds and spreads.
Catherine, I want to ask you a question. This is from my list of questions. I look forward to the spring planting season, but, I buy plants kind of randomly based on, like, the colors of the blooms. I'm like, oh, I like purple. Oh, yellow will look nice to that. Or, oh, there's some red. But there is a lot to consider when we're out buying plants. Are there any particular plants or trees that, as we're doing this, that we should be thinking about, like, like with the plants, when does it bloom, or what role does it serve? Because I understand that it is good to have diversity of plants in your garden.
Yes, and your method of choosing plants is totally okay. Like, I often buy plants based on it's in bloom or it's not in bloom when I go, or I love that color. I've never seen that one before. I need to have it now. I'm going to get three of them. That means you're a gardener, so that's okay. But I think Julie touched on this earlier. You always want to think, am I putting a sun plant in a sunny spot and a shade plant in a shady spot? So you want to pick the right plant for the right place. A lot of times we get attracted to what's novel, what's new in the garden center. And there's a lot of plant breeders out there breeding novel plants for us all the time because we buy them without thinking. And so I think you want to sort of hesitate about those new ones that come out, and you want to be sure that that they fit your space. And I like to, the longer I've gardened, the less I'm attracted to the novel plant and the more I'm attracted to tried and trues that will thrive in my yard. So one thing you can do in the spring or in the end of the growing season in the fall is look in your yard and look at what thrived, what did really well, right? And then make a list. Like, these things did exceptionally well in my yard this year, and I need more of those. And then which ones have I been coaxing along and they just aren't doing well? Well, those, don't buy those again. Or maybe take them out next year.
Break up with them. Just let them go, right?
Just break up with them. It's not worth the effort. And gardening is experimenting, right? Mm-hmm. So it is totally okay to experiment. And then for a pitch for putting in plants that are native to Minnesota is, in general, those plants are going to be somewhat adapted or adapted to what used to be climate in Minnesota. So they should thrive. But also, I always like, you know, once again, with getting on my soapbox, I like to plant plants that pollinators will visit. And so another thing you can do in your yard is look around June, July, and see which flowers are the busiest, that have the most pollinators on them. Mm-hmm. And then look at the plants that have the least number of pollinators on them.
Meaning they have bees and things like buzzing around them all the time. There's a lot of activity.
Bees on them, Syrphid flies, butterflies. There's these things called soldier beetles that are usually on like Rudbeckias and black-eyed Susans. And so those then have value to pollinators, right? And so then your yard becomes not just eye candy for you and your neighbors. It becomes actually a habitat in an effort to conserve nature and to provide value to critters other than ourselves.
I love that. Let's take a phone call from a listener. Barbara is on the line in Minneapolis. Barbara, thank you for being patient and waiting. And what's your question?
So my question is, two, my yard is a big mess, and I'm happy to try the no mow. Also, no rake, don't touch anything, because I seem to have a growing amount of ant hills. And so I'm inclined to try to do something to address them, but I don't want to touch the lawn if it's better not to.
Mm-hmm. And then I see my notes here. You also have some questions about, should we be raking during the month of May?
Yeah. Yep. Should I just not touch anything at all? Don't rake, don't mow, don't do anything.
All right. Well, let's talk to Julie about that. What do we need to know in addition to like holding off on mowing? What else should we just be patient with, Julie?
Well, I think that, I think it goes back to leaving the leaves and just not worrying about that. I think this whole show should be about not having to do as much, like taking it easy in your lawn, in your
garden. I like it. Can you say that again?
Kind of kicking back.
Can you say that again? Just don't do as much. I like that.
We tend to over control our gardens and our lawns. So I think that just kind of relaxing a little bit, being more observant, maybe, you know, taking pleasure in your gardens and things. The caller says her yard is a mess. That's probably in comparison to maybe other people in the neighborhood. So I think you can leave the leaves as a mulch. You can, deadhead your, any flowers, spent flowers that are on your shrubs. You can do that. If you have hydrangeas, for example, you can deadhead those. We just, produced a nice video on that. And, you can also think about what you want to plant. And as Catherine said, choose plants that are pollinator friendly. And look for plants that are going to bloom into the fall. So some of our later blooming, our native flowering plants will bloom later into the season. We want to provide something for bees and other pollinators throughout the entire season from April through October if possible. Mm-hmm. Think about planting bulbs in the fall for spring bloom next year. But you can do some raking now. You can rake up some of the dead areas of your lawn and you can reseed that. You're still allowing for pollinators to feast on any flowering plants in your lawn, but you do want to do some seeding at this point. So you can still do that. Mm-hmm. And then also you can just think about what you want to plant. Maybe do some shopping at your local garden center. Ask them, see what's new, or go to those tried and true that you really enjoy. You can do some division as well.
And Barbara, you know, folks walking by your house might be thinking, look at Barbara over there creating community and supporting her pollinators. They may think your yard looks good and maybe they don't think it's a mess. Let's take another phone call. This one is also in Minneapolis. Bonnie is on the line. Good morning, Bonnie.
Good morning. Loving the show today. And I have a question about my really ugly evergreen bushes out front. So they took a really hard hit during the drought last year, and there's a lot of brown on them. I ended up going through and cleaning it out as much as I could. One of them looks like it's dying. Hmm. The other one I was able to trim off the dying part. They're not that attractive, but I really love that they're a great habitat for birds. We actually have a pair of cardinals that nest there every year, and it's a safe space for the feeders and the bird baths. So I'm wondering how I can deal with the ugly brown that's on these bushes and possibly revitalize them. They're planted very close to our foundation, so I don't like to water them extra, but they did get a lot of rain this spring, so
So in general, they get a lot of rain, but they're just looking pretty bad right now.
So Catherine Bonnie has some ugly brown bushes. Those are her words. Any suggestions for her?
Yeah, I'm guessing they're yews. And the problem with yews when they get brown is that they're not going to regrow from the part you cut. So like if you cut back a deciduous tree, new lateral branches will grow and it'll look nice. And that just doesn't happen with those as well. It's good that you recognize the value to the birds because that's a good reason to keep them around. You should also, the key with evergreens is it sounds like they got hit by the drought in the summer, so extra water for evergreens. But you also have to water evergreens going into the fall because that's when they need to store that water to use it during winter. And a lot of our evergreens get really burnt in March, especially if there's still snow cover and they've sort of run out of water at the tap down there by the roots and the sun hits them really hard. It reflects off the snow. They often get sunburnt then. I would try things with those used to like get some nice organic matter around the roots so that water, they don't dry out as quickly. There might be just a ton of surface roots around the area. So do what you can to improve the first 2 inches or so around on the topsoil to get some organic mulch around that so that they retain moisture a little bit better. And then see, pretty soon they should all start setting out new leaves for the spring. See if that takes care of the brown. Don't be too impatient with them. And then just keep watching them over summer. And if you just can't stand it, then, you know, maybe do a little more pruning. But give them a good try. I like that you're caring about the birds that nest in them.
And Julie, any thoughts about brown bushes? Should we just take them out or can they be saved?
Well, if they're just only brown on the tips, on the tops, you can do a shearing and shear those off. And I would consider that if that happens year after year, if they get worse and worse, you may want to then take them out and replace them with something else.
On Twitter here, we have an emergency from Felicity. Felicity says, help, squirrels ate half the tulips I planted last fall. What can I do differently this coming fall? How do we protect tulip bulbs and tulips, Catherine?
Well, don't plant tulips.
Oh, no, but they're so pretty. What do you mean?
right, but it's... So rabbits and squirrels both like them. I think the squirrels like snap off the actual flower. They just love it. Right? So unless you're going to put a big cage around them to keep the squirrels away, plant tons of them so that out of 100, you're going to get 50 that bloom. Like you just, it's a numbers game with squirrels and tulips.
I didn't know that.
Daffodils naturalize and they are not as attractive to squirrels, and so you might want to switch to daffodils and
they're
there's
beautiful.
Other blooming bulbs, but tulips definitely. When I see tulips blooming, I think, wow, you escaped the squirrels. It's right. Like you're planting lollipops for them. They just are very happy that you put them in.
Julie, any tricks for saving tulips?
One thing you can do is if you're doing like an area, and I always like to plant bulbs in big groups, like not just one here, one there, but just a big mass of them, kind of consolidate them. Some chicken wire over that, and the plants will come up between the chicken wire. So the bulbs are one of the things the squirrels like too. They dig out the bulbs. So that's nothing, you know, if after you've planted 100 tulip bulbs and then you come and find 100 holes, it's really a bummer. So they will do that. So that will help them from digging them up. As far as keeping animals from feeding on the plants once they've emerged, I have used Milorganite as it has a little bit of fertilizer, a little bit of repellent value to it, and sprinkled that around those plants. You might want to try that as well. But at this point, if they've chewed off the flowers, Catherine mentioned, it's kind of like you have to wait till next year.
I'm talking with two master gardeners and taking your phone calls, your gardening questions in Rochester. Jessica's on the phone. Good morning, Jessica.
Hi, good morning, Angela. Huge fan of your show. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you. What's going on?
Well, I have backyard chickens. I have just a small flock here in town, and I love them, but their droppings absolutely destroy the grass that was already in the lawn before I got the chickens. Mm-hmm. And in the little bit of research I've done, I know their droppings are high in nitrogen and phosphorus and potassium, and I was wondering if your experts had any recommendations on what would be a good alternative for ground cover in the yard that the chickens are in.
All right. What can you tell us about chicken droppings and how to save the grass, Julie?
Oh, boy. That's a good question. Chickens will scratch at that area. And so I don't know if there's a lot of ground covers that will tolerate that. They like to actually be in the – I'm not a chicken grower. I don't have any chickens. But they do like to have dust and dirt. I think, don't they roll in – kind of they fluff up and roll in the dirt. I wish Teresa Rooney was on. She's the master gardener who has had chickens. But
Catherine,
I don't know.
Catherine, do you have any
much will work.
Any chicken dropping advice?
I'm gonna have to join Julie on this one. I don't have chickens. And I know in the country you just let them roam over such a large area.
Right, right. It doesn't matter. Right,
right. So in a concentrated area, like Julie's right, they do like to muck around in the dirt and the soil. But I think having a nice looking lawn and chickens maybe is just incompatible.
Mm-hmm.
Based on, and you know, if you can collect their droppings and compost them somewhere, that's probably a good thing. But just raw droppings on lawn.
Mm-hmm. Well, from chicken droppings, I want to just have this last question. I just loved hearing from both of you this message about don't forget about why we garden. It's for the enjoyment of it. And Catherine, what would you say to people just in our last minute here about just again, breathe and just let's try to be calm about this, right? Not be so critical of ourselves.
Yes, don't be critical of ourselves. And Julie said it earlier when she said, just do less. Like, we don't have to do as much as we think we have to do. And I have to say, I've had, you know, big perennial beds. I have no lawn in my front yard. People think it takes more effort to have that. And I think that's a fallacy because honestly, there's very little I do to my yard. Every year I leave the leaves. I let the plants grow. I deadhead them way later, like in the spring after the bees are done with them. And I just sort of enjoy it.
Do less. That was the gardening
advice. I don't do that much.
That was the theme
of
this. Do less. All right. I want to thank our master gardeners today for all of your advice and all of our listeners who called in. Good luck, everybody. We've been talking with Julie Weisenhorn, a horticulture educator and associate professor at the University of Minnesota Extension, and Catherine Grant there in the Department of Biology at the University of St. Thomas. She is a horticulturalist. Thank you so much. And remember, you can get some good advice here at NPR News. Today's conversation was produced by Samantha Matsumoto. I'll talk to you again Monday morning at 9.
Programming supported by Newgate School, providing automotive training for underserved young adults in our community. This spring, why not donate a used vehicle to Newgate School? They get good jobs, and you get a tax deduction. Do something good.